Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like the full season of FX's epic limited series, Shogun. FX's new international spy thriller, The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. And don't miss the all-new crime series, Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events and starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hi, PD Stories listeners. We just wanted to take a moment to let you all know we wish you are staying safe and healthy during this challenging time. Thank you to everyone for doing their part to stay inside for our collective well-being, and a very big thank you to all the first responders out there keeping us safe.
This episode will include sensitive content. Please visit the show notes for more details and listen at your own discretion.
Welcome to PD Stories. I'm your host, Tom Morris Jr., crime reporter and Washington, D.C. Special Police Officer. Today we sit down with Richland County Sheriff's Department Senior Deputy Addie Perez.
And not understanding how dangerous that situation is of having a child with a weapon in the car and then unattended.
Fans of Live PD have seen Deputy Perez throughout her career with the department. And today we're going to go behind some of her most pivotal moments in front of and behind the camera. We hear about her life before the show as a military veteran and how the show has impacted her life and career today.
And every veteran knows we have gone through something where we just need some help and assistance, somebody to understand them.
Please be advised, today's conversation will include a discussion of domestic violence. Please listen at your own discretion. Deputy Perez, welcome to PD Stories.
Thank you.
Now, let's start at the very beginning. You grew up in New York City.
I am born and raised in the Bronx. I am as Bronx as it's going to get. So I've only been in South Carolina for about going on 6 years.
And your dad was a law enforcement officer as well?
Yes, he actually retired for deputy sheriff of New York City.
You know, I didn't know till you told me this when I first met you, that there were even sheriffs in New York City. I'd never thought about it. I thought that NYPD seemed to be, you know, everywhere, and you had MTA in different departments, but I didn't know that there were sheriffs in New York City until you told me that.
Yes, they've been around for a very long time. My dad was actually the designer of the deputy sheriff car that actually used to roll around back in the day.
Really?
So he actually created the design on the car and the stickers on it and everything like that. And then he'd been there for 26 years, and then retirement kicked in, and he was done, good to go. They're like the underdogs. They're not like the deputy sheriff up there is not like it is here. They are the underdogs. They have a different type of work, I guess, but they do assist with NYPD and stuff like that. But he's been part of it for a very long time.
And Richland County sheriffs have been on Live PD from the very first episode. And one of the things I've noticed over the last 3 years is that we see a lot of people busted with crack in Richland County. We don't see crack as much in most of the other jurisdictions that we cover. Tell me, can you talk about that a little bit? What's the deal is down there with that?
Well, when I've been taught by our narcotics teams and our interdiction teams and stuff like that, apparently Richland County and where it's located, it's Columbia, has a lot of intersections and highways that pass through South Carolina coming from different directions. So from Florida, from New York, from Texas area and Tennessee, that it's kind of like a go-through and a lot of folks are transporting that by trucks, by just hiding them in their vehicles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just how there's a lot of highways coming through us, and that's what's happening with the crack and the heroin and things like that. It's been coming through South Carolina more than we know, especially like on buses and things like that. That's what I've been taught, and that's what we've been noticing as well. So if it's weed, it will eventually sometimes will lead to more than what we think. It won't be just weed. It'll be more than crack and heroin and above all that. We actually found ecstasy, I think, two weeks ago. Ecstasy started popping up pretty often now, so it's been interesting.
And then there's the ever-present weed that Lieutenant Danny Brown always seems to find.
Yes, he's always forever getting a headache. when he smells it, he is very good at. He does get headaches when he smells it.
Really?
Yes, he does. He's very sensitive to it. Is the reason why he can smell the littlest amount, and you can tell when he starts getting bothered by it. Especially me, I'm always working with him. Him being my lieutenant, he gets very bothered by smelling it, and that's why he's able to notice it pretty often. Even if it hasn't been in the car, but they've smoked it before, he can still smell the odor within the car as well.
Now, we had an incident down there in Richland County on the show recently where Lieutenant Danny Brown walked up on an unattended running vehicle, looked in the window, saw a semi-automatic handgun in the console, a child in the back seat, and then the father appeared on the balcony of the stairs of the apartment building. And I Sticks and Dan and I were just, we couldn't believe it. Someone would leave a child in a car with a loaded gun. And then it turned out there were drugs in the car as well.
Yes. So, you know, people's priorities are very different lately, and kids are probably the last priority where everything else is, you know, I'm hustling, I'm trying to make money, I'm trying to make, you know, support my family is probably one of their reasons why they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And not understanding how dangerous that situation is of having a child with a weapon in a car and then unattended. Mm-hmm. The highest crime that's been happening within Richland County and anywhere in any of the states is motor vehicle theft. Mm-hmm. Because people are starting to realize they are very complacent and leaving their vehicles unoccupied leaving them occupied with children or things in there and leave them unlocked or windows unlocked and cracked. And that's leading to another crime where they're just stealing the vehicles. And imagine that. Imagine somebody saw that, saw the weapon and saw the money or the drugs mm-hmm. in the car and not realizing there was a child in the back. And now the whole car is gone. And so it's interesting. That's why we try to stress the locking of the cars and also the child leaving. No child should be in the car by themselves at such a young age, and then you're having all these things and shootouts. We're having so many shootings from people stealing their weapons from their cars because they mm-hmm. left them unlocked mm-hmm. And things like that. So it's a lot of variables are involved when it comes to things like that, and that gentleman was not thinking at all and not thinking for his child and his family and put her in such a dangerous situation where that could have led to a high-speed chase and that child suffering from an accident or something mm-hmm. like that. We can, who knows? Or the child just grabbing the gun and thinking it's a toy and shooting themselves. Mm-hmm. So imagine, or even taking the drugs and taking them themselves, thinking it's candy. So many things could have happened that night. So that Lieutenant Danny Brown was very upset, and I think the world was upset about that as well. So
absolutely. I'm surprised at how many people do leave weapons in their cars. We just profiled something on Wanted recently where a suspect had just basically gone down a row of cars at night and trying the doors, see which ones are unlocked. And, you know, a lot of people do leave them unlocked. And in the course of one night, he got four guns out of unoccupied vehicles. Four handguns.
Yes. You know, even if you're CWP, like, you know, every state is different with their mm-hmm. gun laws and
concealed,
things like that.
Concealed weapon permit.
Mm-hmm. Concealed weapon. You can have a concealed weapon permit and you can carry a weapon and stuff like that as long as concealed. But you can also still carry a weapon as well as long as you have it in a glove compartment or in a lockbox in the trunk in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And people are just forget. They bring their weapon to say, hey, I don't want to be the trouble of bringing them in the weapon in and out. I'm just going to leave it in my car. And then depending what model car you have, if you have an older car, of course, you have to automatically make sure your cars are locked. And if you have a newer version car, of course, you depend on the hub. But sometimes if the car has the door cracked or unlocked, the vehicle doesn't secure itself. You will have to make sure your doors are secure. And that's what's happening. A lot of just people are complacent or just within the neighborhood saying, hell, nothing will happen here. You know, nothing's fine. Everything's fine. And next thing you know, they're gone. The gun's gone and, you know, the whole car's gone. Mm-hmm. So
what's the most hair-raising experience you've had as a sheriff's deputy?
Maybe that time when Lieutenant Danny Brown and me stopped that vehicle, that white vehicle, and he ran, and it was for crack, and then Lieutenant Danny Brown was fighting him off, and I had to, not, a lot of people didn't realize that there were two people in that vehicle. That was the one that I got hit in the eye.
I remember, yes. Can you explain that whole scenario a little bit for people that didn't happen to see LAPD that night? What happened?
Yes. So we were in Region 4, which is and then Long Creek is what it's called. And we always have issues down that road and stuff like that. And we saw this vehicle, which was a white vehicle. And of course, Lieutenant Danny Brown smelled an odor. Mm-hmm. I believe it was an odor that smoke came out of the car.
Of course.
So I actually smelled it back to my car as well, which it happens. You can actually smell if you are smoking in your car. the cars behind you can smell you too, especially if it kind of comes through your vent. So he smelled it, and then I smelled it as soon as we made the turn. He went to make the stop, and once he made the stop, the vehicle actually did pull over. But as soon as he tried to make contact with the vehicle, the suspect, who was the driver, decided to bail out of the car and start running. He went to run to the right, but not realizing there was a fence there, so he panicked and run. I let Danny Brown chase him while I tried to detain a suspect in the passenger side. But when he saw the gate there, the guy ran across and right in front of me. And I was like, I can't let this guy just get away, because Lieutenant Danny Brown was still in the wood line. So I gave chase and I went after him. But he decided to go between a bush and a building in the corner. When he pushed the brush to clear out, he let go of the brush, and it was at the same time I was right behind him to grab him. I was like inches away from grabbing him. But when he let go of the bush, the branch smacked me right in the eye. And then we both of us, because there was a ditch there, that we both actually collapsed trying to continue running. So I just got up, and then Lieutenant Danny Brown was able to catch up to him. And when he got into the pavement was when he was able to get him down on the ground. That's when I caught up. I was actually partially blurry. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see because of the hit. It hit me so hard in the face. Mm-hmm. So everything was blurry to me. So I just saw the figures and where they were. When I made contact with Lieutenant Danny Brown, he said, I'm good. I got him, which I should have never left in the first place. But he told me to go. He's my lieutenant. So I'm in that leadership where if my leadership tells me to do something, and because he's safe in that situation, I'm going to go, continue doing the other part of the job. So he tried to detain him. I ran to the other vehicle, which was this female suspect. She was already scared, so she wasn't even moving anyways, and I'm glad she wasn't gonna move. So try to detain her, and then we drive the Camaros, so I had to stuff her in my car and said, get in my car, so she wouldn't move and she was in cuffs, so that she was secured, because there was all the narcotics was still in the vehicle. Then I ran all the way back to Lieutenant Danny Brown and then assist him in trying to get him in cuffs after that. So it was a lot of running in that situation. So, but he was able to finally get that guy, because apparently he had just came out of jail not so long ago. And he was already pissed off because he didn't want to go back. And it was like, well, he was doing the same crime of when you were the before. So that's why he was very emotional. He's very upset because he got caught again for the crime that he just did before, that he just got out of jail for. It was a hard situation for me because this gentleman, I didn't know what to expect from him. I didn't know if he had a weapon on him or something like that. And when I went to Lieutenant Danny Brown and he said I was good, that he had him, and I left to go to the other suspect that was in the car, I felt iffy because I should have never left Lieutenant Danny Brown, because he had a little struggle in there where he had to dry stun him and things like that, which was the taser. Mm-hmm. I felt that I should have just stayed with him. And detain him first before I left to the vehicle, because I feel like if I left, and which I did, something probably would have happened to him. And I'm glad nothing did, but anything could have happened in that situation. But it's hard because you got to make that split decision. What's the right one? Are you going to do it with this person first, or are you going to go with the other one first? I mean, because think about it. What if that person in the vehicle decided to actually get in the driver's side and take the car and then hit all of us with the car? So it was a tricky situation for me, but lucky I was able, everything was calm enough that nobody got hurt in the process except for my eye.
We take a quick pause to tell you about a sponsor of ours. Right now, we can't do a lot of things. That includes getting your hair cut or coloring your hair. Even while we're all at home, it's important to feel professional and good with how you look, even if it's just your cat seeing you. But doing your own color at home, well, I've heard it's not so easy, nor does it always turn out so good. But now you can take coloring your hair at home to the next level with Madison Reed. PD Stories listeners get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with the code PDSTORIES at madison-reed.com. It's a top-notch quality product to get the job done from the safety of your home. Many Madison Reed clients comment on how their new hair color has improved their lives. This is game-changing color you can do yourself and look as if you just came from the salon. What makes Madison Reed color unique is that it's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous multidimensional shades. Find your perfect shade at madison-reed.com. PD Stories listeners get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with the code PD Stories. That's code PD Stories. Stay home, stay healthy, and stay looking fashionable.
Do you have your own podcast? Are you looking to start one? Look no further than Launchpad Digital Media, right here on the leading podcast network, Podcast One. Don't pay fees for hosting, distribution, or analytics. Launchpad DM lets you focus on your content for free with unlimited hosting, full control of distribution and analytics, and your own show page on launchpaddm.com. You own all of your own content and your subscribers. Podcast One will even promote the site, and if your show grows, you could be invited to join our all-star roster, including Adam Carolla, Caitlin Bristow, Shaquille O'Neal, The Lady Gang, and Jordan Harbinger, to name a few. Why use any other hosting platform? Tell your family and friends. Sign up right now at LaunchpadDM.com.
You know, I have yet to see anybody in 3 years on Live PD outrun Lieutenant Danny Brown.
There's a couple of times some people outrun him,
yeah.
But he ends up fighting them later. He really does. He. If somebody does run for him, he makes it his business to go find them.
He's good. He's relentless in that regard.
Yeah, he makes sure if he doesn't find them that same night, he will do some research and see how he can figure, you know, if he ever seen what they look like or what vehicle they've driven, and try to pinpoint what area they will actually be in. And he makes it work. He's not one to give up. So, but out of the times as he's ran, he's pretty much caught almost everybody that he's run into with the help of everybody else as well.
There was a big bank robbery chase in Richland County, I remember, a while back. There were a bunch of people involved. I think Deputy Boyles was involved. Were you on that pursuit? It was several suspects that it was a daytime pursuit.
Was it the
pursuit.
Black car?
Yes.
Yes, it was a black car, the black truck.
Yes. Tell me about that.
So we got a call. Actually, I wasn't the initial person that called. I guess a call came out where somebody robbed a bank. I think he had a mask on or something like that. He was able to jump in the car. And then the deputies that were close by started the pursuit. I was close in the area where I was able to catch up to it, and other deputies as well. And it was a lot of us there, K-9, mm-hmm. traffic unit. I mean, yeah. There's a whole bunch of us, because this guy had a truck that was coated armor, like the hard paint, I believe it was. I can't remember what they call mm-hmm. it, that he used in the back of the bed of the truck. And he was ramming people on the highway with his truck, trying to get away from us, because he had just robbed a bank. And he had made a corner, and he realized he was kind of like surrounded by us, and he decided to bail out of the vehicle and run. But the problem is he had ran on the exit of the highway, which was a turnaround. So there was nowhere to go, because we were everywhere on the highway, on the regular street, you know, stuff like that. And he pretty much got detained by one of our deputies, who just came back for a medical reason. He just came back and was able to detain him. When we searched his vehicle, he barely had any damage on his car, because it was such a big truck, mm-hmm. but we found money from one bank. And then when I continued to search and everybody else started searching, he had money from other banks as well. Because he had the folder, you know, the money folder that they usually carry the money to, to change over or something like that, mm-hmm. or save. He had money in his sweatpants. He had money in a book bag. I mean, you name it. It was everywhere. So that's why when you see me describe it, is that he has stolen from different banks, that this is not his first time. So he definitely went into investigations and stuff like that, because they needed to figure out what other places he did hit to, because he had too much on that vehicle.
You know, one of my favorite things on the show with Richland County is Deputy Fergal, who always ends his encounters with people like, "You have a nice South Carolina day now."
He just got promoted, actually. He just got promoted to sergeant.
Oh, okay.
Yes, he just recently got promoted, so congratulations to him. He is an awesome, you know, I didn't know who he was until I saw him on the show, but he mm-hmm. is a very gentle soul.
Yeah.
He has
a great way
doing.
With people.
Yes, he does. He's very gentle. I think not so long ago, he was on a chase for last week or mm-hmm. the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right behind the guy chasing him. So he's a gentle soul, but who would run you down in a heartbeat? So, yep.
And then tell you, if you got to go in handcuffs, he'll still say, you have yourself a nice South Carolina day now.
Because, you know, you can't take one thing about being in law enforcement is you can't take this stuff personal.
Right.
You know, if you're going to be in law enforcement, you got to have some thick skin and you got to be patient and you have to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And anything that these people say to you, don't take it personal, because it's just saying things to make you upset. And the moment you show that emotion, that means they're getting to you. And next thing you know, you're going to do something reckless that's going to get you hemmed up, you know. And Sergeant Fergal now is he does that, and the rest of us too. Like, you know what, you say what you want to say, but at the end of the day, you're responsible for your actions and the things that you've done. It's just, and he's that way too. He's like, you know what, I'm gonna do my job, I'm gonna be gentle about it, but you can never say I was never nice to you.
What are the key things you think you've learned from working with Lieutenant Danny Brown?
Oh, let's see.
I know there's a lot. It has to be an awful lot.
Oh my God.
But just a couple of things.
Basically, keep running. keep running.
In a pursuit, you mean? Or?
Yeah, just keep running.
Just keep running.
You know what? When you smell it, it's going to be something more. Be careful. Always train. He's always making sure, hey, train, and make sure you understand what's going on. And if you don't understand how something is, then make sure you ask, you know. So he always enforces that, and just making sure we connect with everybody and things like that. So there's a lot of little tidbits that I've gotten from him for some time. But we do work well together. You know, he always cracking jokes, and I mm-hmm. crack on him right back. mm-hmm. So he definitely has him and several other people, like, you know, Mark Lariano and mm-hmm. And Ten Danny Brown, and of course the Deputy Mulcahy, have been mm-hmm. people who I've yes. learned from throughout this time. So,
you know, it always amazes me when I see people that just bail out and run, and then when you finally catch them, they go, "Why'd you run?" And maybe it's two guys jump out of the car, and they mm-hmm. both run, and you catch one, and he goes, "Well, I ran because he ran." So you actually didn't have any weed, you had no drugs, you had no gun, you just ran because your partner ran, who actually does have a warrant. And you're like, really?
Yes. you know, a lot of people don't think clearly on some things, especially if they know they've done something wrong, they know there's something bad in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Their first instinct is to run and just make and hope for the best that we'll never catch them. And then, of course, you catch them, and then they'll just start crying about it because, oh, why you caught me? You know, it's you're responsible for what you do. Mm-hmm. Nobody's forced you into this. Nobody's forced you to commit this crime. No, you know it's wrong. If you know it's wrong, then don't do it. And why is the life of a criminal so amazing to you? Why? And then you're going to, oh, I don't have a life because I'm in jail this whole time, or I don't have a life because I'm always getting locked up. We don't like arresting people. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't. If we can give you an opportunity and say, hey, start a new life, do things, and just kind of teach you and educate you, we'd rather do that. But, you know, if we have to arrest you and take you to jail, it's because, you know, you made the mistake. And when they start running, they just think it's the best thing to do and see how long you can run and how easy you can get away from it. And that's not always the case, because if we have the support of the community as well, which we do, and we're starting to, and it's getting stronger, if they see you running and they see that you're a suspect, they're going to call us and say, hey, I just saw that person running right by my house, which actually happened last week. They was chasing a suspect all through the woods. He was only 19 years old, just about. And he got caught because he hanged out and tired from running in front of somebody's porch. And they gave us a call. I just heard about that, and I'm like, well, he kept running thinking he had the stamina, he was running, but he got burnt out, and all he had to took was him being on the wrong person's porch, and they gave us a call, and he got busted.
You know, there's a lot of people joke about Live PD, like nobody has a driver's license that gets pulled over on Live PD. But what a lot of people don't understand is the financially punitive nature of the traffic infraction system in our country. And that there are a lot of people that get a traffic ticket that on their meager income, it really blows their budget. They can't afford to pay it. And then when they can't afford to pay it, a warrant gets issued or their license gets suspended, and it can snowball into you losing your job. If you're a single mom with four kids and you work as a waitress, one ticket can really upend your financial situation. And as officers and deputies, you have some discretion, don't you, that you exercise a lot. You can use compassion in some of these traffic stops and not hit somebody up with a big financial lick, right?
Yeah, we have the flexibility in the decision to what we give people. Folks that, let's say, we pull over a lot of people who are driving under suspended. And a lot of people don't realize they're driving under suspended because the insurance company had contacted DMV to have them their license suspended because they missed a payment or something like that.
But they don't know.
Yeah, they don't know, which is, it's okay because it does happen because you really don't get a notification from the DMV that you're suspended, especially if it's the first time.
Really?
And usually, yeah. So what happens is if you don't pay your insurance or there's a missed payment for your property taxes or something like that in South Carolina and you don't pay and you ignore it, they have the ability for the insurance company or for the property tax to contact DMV and have your license suspended. And you won't be notified until your tag is suspended and then your license is also suspended. So your license is no longer valid. And we pull you over because you're suspended on your tag and it will let us know why. It will be insurance, you know, it will let us know for property taxes or something like that. And then when that happens, we have the ability to pull you over and say, hey, and then we have to take your license and most likely take your vehicle and get it towed because now you don't have a license. And then it's our discretion to how we want to handle it, where if you want to give them the opportunity to fix their license and reinstate it so they can pay their fees, which is very expensive, by the way. If they bring that information to court and they say, hey, you know, I fixed everything. I didn't know at the time. We have the decision to drop the ticket so that because they've already paid thousands of dollars already to reinstate it. So as long as they fix it, they can just be good to go. Or if they don't fix it, then they'll be, you know, they're going to have to talk to the judge about it. And he will be the decision maker of what happens to their situation.
We're going to pause the show for a second to tell you about another sponsor of ours. Right now, so much of what we hear and talk about is stressful, upsetting, and anxiety-inducing, quite frankly. So I find it really important to make time to have some fun, learn something new, maybe even have a few laughs. So that's when I turn to a game I love to play, Best Fiends. It's a perfect respite from the doom and gloom in the news. It has challenging puzzles, a great story to it, and it gets your brain going. And heck, it's just a good time. While the game has its challenges, it's also a casual game for adults that anyone can play. You can spend as much or as little time as you'd like in the game. Best Fiends is really a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike any other puzzle games out there. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so it never gets old. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Now, what led you into the military?
Another thing I was trying to avoid as well. I was trying to not avoid all the family traditions, and I was trying to make it a little different by just going to college and just making it there. And I was actually trying to be a veterinarian, but my financial aid fell through. I had to make a different decision, and I decided to join the Army. The Army is one of the only ones that actually has a veterinary technician program that serves all branches of the military to treat military working dogs.
Tell me a little bit about that work, working with military dogs.
The best thing I've ever done in my life. Actually, did a veterinary technician work for over 15 years straight out of high school before I did any of this. And that was my goal, it was to get into that. And I've always wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to continue with the military and had that option. So I actually enlisted as a veterinary technician. And once I did end up getting deployed, probably 10 months later after I got AIT training and basic training. And I got shipped to Afghanistan for a year.
How hard was basic training?
Easy.
Easy.
Oh, yeah. No,
you're a natural born soldier, huh?
Of course. Yes. No. You know, it was a part of a cadet program back in the day that my family ran, and I was already used to the leadership, the army style, the push-ups are never a problem. I was always in fit, and basic training is more like 90% mental and 10% physical. And I was already in there, and I was a leader in basic training. I took care of my group, you know, and they led through it. You know, I was doing what I had to do, and it was easy for me.
Now, how did you end up in Richland County, South Carolina?
So back in 2014, I decided to be a drill sergeant. So I went to the academy, went to school, and then there was an opportunity for the academy that they were looking for drill sergeant leaders, which are the instructors for sergeants to turn into drill sergeants. So you're talking about advanced veterans going into the drill sergeant position. And I applied for it. I was on there for 2 years before I transferred out to Richland County. I maxed out my time, and I needed to advance, and I wanted to give something else a try.
You know, when I think of drill sergeants, I always think of the movie, An Officer and a Gentleman, or, you know, a drill sergeant asking some kid, "Where are you from, Private?" You know, did you used to ask people questions? I have to ask you, did you used to ask people questions like that?
Oh, all the time. We all do. You know, it's just a typical stereotype with drill sergeants. There's certain things we always say. There's always.
What was one of your go-to? What was one of your go-to lines?
Pride don't look like a bag of chips. It's mine. And everybody always thought, like, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean?
What does that mean?
My privates never knew what that meant, but every time I would say it, they got the hint that when I says "don't look like a bag of chips" was basically don't look like a mess.
I see.
And they caught on in that. Yo, and then I got privates saying the same thing. Like, Joe Sar said, "Don't look like a bag of chips." And I don't know where I got it, but it was just one of those things that clicked into our head and clicked into my head, and decided to go roll with it, and it worked out for me.
What are some of the differences working in the military versus law enforcement?
I think the reason why a lot of military folks get into law enforcement is it's an easier transition for us. You know, there's the structure, the uniform is every day. You know, we're used to being a certain uniform practically every day, and that's what we walk out with from home. And then you have a structure where there's leadership and there's a position, and especially if you have some infantry folks or anybody who's been in combat, of course, you know, tactics and being in the SWAT team or SRT teams and things like that, it's just a more comfortable transition. So that's why we have a lot of military folks, and that's why Sheriff Fly is very gung-ho about military people coming in as well.
And one of the most memorable moments we experienced with you on Live PD was when you encountered a homeless veteran who I believe was living out of his car. And you and him got into a very deep conversation that really touched everyone who saw it that night. Can you talk about that?
That was a very sensitive situation where he was struggling. And I saw that, you know, he was going through a hard time. And it hit me because, you know, I'm a veteran and Lieutenant Danny Brown's a veteran as well. And he just wanted to see his kids. And he was coming from California, him coming from a different state. And it's hard for people who are coming from a different state and not understanding what the rules and laws are in another state that they're in. Mm-hmm. So that was another struggle that we had to face. But he was still grieving. He was still hurting from his past. And I can tell from that he was not healing at all. He was going through so much that he felt like he never got a break. And where I kicked in was because I had a moment where I had struggles in the past, like anybody else. We faced something and we had to go through it, and, you know, we pushed through it. And everybody's different. Either you stay in that situation and you don't, you know, get out of it, or you kind of make some sacrifices and make some decisions and you do get out of it. My situation was different, where I actually was able to get out of that and improve my lifestyle. So in him being overseas and stuff like that, and every veteran knows we have gone through something where we just need some help and assistance, somebody to understand them. And I think he needed to be heard. And that's why I want to let him know, I'm here for you. I heard you. I hear you and I feel for you. You know, I know he was hurting, and so did I. So I know what he was going through.
It was one of the most extraordinarily human encounters that we've seen on Live PD. And, Now, you're a mom now, and you're raising your kid. Do you think you'll ever get to where you say to your kid, "Don't look like a bag of chips"?
Oh, my God. Honestly, I'm already teaching him, like, as he was one of my privates, but just with my love and, you know, compassion and everything. But I'm still me, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just the mom now. I'm still doing everything I'm supposed to do and just learning the mom thing, because this is the first time for me. I never took care of children. I never took care of babies. I actually try to avoid them. Mm-hmm. So this is a new experience for me, and I love it. It's great. You know, he's mine. You know, I'm doing a great job raising him the best as I can, and I'm learning. It's not as hard as I expect it to be. I think it's going pretty good, and he's doing very well. So, but he will be hearing my voice when it comes to, you better cut it out, right? You know, so it's great.
Now, you worked night shift with the Sheriff's Department, and I worked night shift as an officer. I know how hard that is. What's it like trying to balance working nights and be a mom now?
Well, with our team, it's a little bit more flexible. We actually do different times depending what we receive in complaints and community complaints and issues that we have in Richland County. So we do have a time where we work days, and then we work mids, and then we work nights. It's not difficult for me because the baby's already sleeping at night anyway, so it's easier for me for him to work at night, and then my husband would take over because he's already home, or my mother-in-law's already home. So it's not as hard for me because I'm not looking for babysitters because I already have mine at home.
Are there any issues that you've had being a female law enforcement officer?
I've said this before, and I've never had an issue being a female officer. And it's the same way in the military. I've never had an issue being a female soldier. And I've said this over and over again, as long as you meet the standards and you're doing your job and you're physically capable of defending yourself and knowing the policies and the procedures and what you need to know, your gender should be irrelevant. You shouldn't have that. But this job here is, we should be on the same playing field, you know, in the military as well. So I've never had an issue.
A lot of civilians don't realize just how much knowledge a police officer has to have. The legal knowledge you have to have, the codes, the statutes, there's a tremendous amount of information that you have to have a command of in order to go out in the street and do the job and to do it within the parameters of what the laws are.
Yes, the law is always changing, and then every state has their own laws and things like that. So we do have classes that we have to watch, and we have to take quizzes and things like that to make sure we stay on top of that from our academy. We get that information all the time. Our policies are always changing. We also, Richland County does a great job in doing quarterly training. So every quarterly, we always learn something new. Every deputy is out there going back to training and retraining on shooting their shotgun, their rifle, on tactics. They're practicing basic tasering movers and things like that. So we are always training. It's never stopping for us.
And you mentioned the Camaros that you have in Richland County. The Camaros, your police car Camaros, are really, really badass. I mean, they are just they're just badass cop cars. And people love seeing them. I know you take them to events, and kids probably just love to get in them. Tell our audience a little bit about those Camaros. It was a couple of years ago when they first got them, right?
Yeah, it was not too long ago that we got the ones that we have now. We used to have, back in the day, the old Camaros. Then he saw that the new stock Camaro 2017 came out. That's when Sheriff Flott made the decision, like, hey, we're going to go back to the Camaros. And he liked how it drove and things like that. And he made the decision, hey, this is the next car for the community action team. So we have about 15 of those cars. And the only people that do drive those cars is the community action team. So they are very fast. They're the SS version, so there's V8 on there. We don't abuse them, but we are the fastest car in Richland County. So whenever any type of patrol needs assistance for a vehicle that's taken off, then we need to catch up to it. It would be us. We are the fastest that we have right now. But that car is not only for patrolling. If a kid waves us down and wants to sit in the Camaro, we let them sit in the Camaro. Mm-hmm. You know, that car is for the community. It's for the job, you know, and it's to make people happy. And a lot of people love to see the cars, especially because it's hooked up with all the stickers and the police equipment and things like that. And when it lights up, it just brightens everybody's day. It's an attention grabber. And, you know, but it's also a vehicle that suspects know, like, hey, this is not a car that you want to get away from, so you might want to just stop that car.
See, I'm driving a straight thumper right here. You don't want to try it.
No.
Don't get fast and furious with us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people know it's us. You know, it's the bad guys tell us that when they see the Camaro, they just don't want to mess with it because they know it's the community action team. We're here to serve. We're here to protect. And we don't play any games. You know, we do these wonderful events and make kids happy and High Five Fridays. We're out here to get you off the street. We're out here to pick up the stuff that's not supposed to be on the street. It's harming people. So we have so many occupations in the community action team, especially with that car.
What are High Five Fridays?
The best thing in the world of Richland County. So I actually did one this morning. High Five Fridays is something that we do with the school resource officers for Richland County as well. And every Friday, they rotate a schedule throughout the year for the school year where we'll send a couple of deputies from different areas like the CAT team, SROs, and things like that, and a traffic unit. We'll go to the school in the morning, and we greet them in the morning of Friday with high fives or fist pumps or something like that and a couple of dances. And we just try to brighten a kid's day in the morning, especially on the Friday right before the weekend, and just to let them know that we're out there, we're here for you, so we don't have that fear between them and us. You know, they've been influenced by the older generation of the cops are bad, the cops are this. So we're trying to improve that connection and community by being out there and being connected and saying, hi, how you doing? You know, and letting them know that we're there for them. So if they ever need us, they are not afraid to approach us and give us a call and let us know that they need some help.
Do you have kids that look at you and encounter you and tell you, you know, I want to be like you when I grow up?
all the time. You know, like I said, one of the goals I wanted is just to motivate women and let them know that, you know what, we are able to do this job or any job, really. And we've had apparently a great increase of females who want to be in law enforcement now, a great increase of females who want to join the military and things like that. It's just a boost of motivation. Females lack great leadership and great role models nowadays. So I feel honored to be one of those people to be a motivator for them and show them we could do this job no matter the size, you know, because I'm not tall, you know, I'm not a huge person. Mm-hmm. No matter what, no matter nationality, no matter what you look like, you're able to do this job, you know, as a woman, we are able to do it. And I get emails all the time and I get phone calls all the time and text messages and say, hey, you know what, I saw you on LAPD and you've motivated me to do this law enforcement job and now I want to do it. So it's definitely a blessing.
And you're part of the community action team. Can you tell our audience what that really entails, what that mission is all about?
So the community action team, which is short for CAT, you know, we are about 15 of us. We're the ones that drive the Camaros, the black Camaros in Richland County. And we are the ones to go to in reference to community meetings, community events. We are the face for the community to make contact with them. So we are assigned within the regions. There's 8 regions and we're all assigned to them. I'm actually assigned to Region 2, which was Investigator Mastroianni's old region. So I replaced him when he got promoted. Mm-hmm. And we all go to meetings every month with our communities. We meet up with them. We talk about our stats in reference to what crimes had happened in the community. And we have a discussion. Is there anything that we can improve on and things, information that we can share that can help solve any type of crimes that happen in the area or just basic preventive safety measures that they can take, because a lot of people are not familiar with things, maybe like identity fraud and folks knocking on their doors. And those are little reminders that we do every month with them. And on top of that, we also take care of any major issues. If we have a large area that's having a lot of car break-ins, we'll shift our schedules and we'll work as a team and we'll go out there and we'll patrol the area. While the road units are working on the calls, we are focused on the complaint that's happening so we can capture whatever it is and kind of more presence in that area. So we definitely do a lot of things. And on top of that, we're also doing the show. There's a good portion of us that are on the CAT team that are on the show as well. So we definitely put our hard work into that as well.
What's the biggest problem facing your community there in Richland County, South Carolina, in terms of policing and needs and concerns of the community from what you see on a daily basis working with the CAT team?
You know, the show has improved Richland County dramatically. It's been, I think that has changed the way people think about us and how we do our jobs and things like that. So it's gotten a lot easier. But we do have a struggle of not taking serious of the information that we put out, just like the weapons in the vehicles and the vehicles being broken into. We repeat it every meeting and we always say, hey, don't do that. You know, just keep in mind it's going to happen. And then until it happens to them and they're like, well, you know, it happens. Where's my car? Where's this? You know, like, well, we kind of repeat it over and over again, you know, safety precautions about your vehicle and securing it. So I think and communication, they're afraid to give us a call and letting us know what's going on until later. So I think that's the hard part in understanding. You need to give us a call as soon as you see something so we can take care of it and solve the issues that are happening. But other than that, the show has improved the community dramatically, especially with the kids.
You know, one of the things that I see on Live PD a lot are women who are in a situation of domestic violence and the ex is stalking them. Maybe they have a child together, so just transferring the child for visits is problematic, and the women are living in fear. I've seen some cases also where the men were the victims as well of yes. Domestic violence. And from your perspective and experience, someone who's in a relationship that's being harassed and stalked and intimidated and is living in fear of their ex or this person that they're trying to get away from, do you have any advice for women and men in that situation?
Yes. You got to be able to find your resources and tell somebody what's going on, because you're going to get hurt in the long run. I know you're either you're scared and it's a struggle to try to, you know, you don't know what's going to happen if you say something, but it's better to say something and get some assistance and some, you know, help from somebody, from law enforcement or some type of resource, than staying quiet and letting this damage happen, because somebody's going to get hurt. So you got to find somebody that can actually assist you. But you, the longer you stay quiet, it's going to be a long, drawn out situation where you don't want to be in it and you'll be more hurt. So if I know it's scary, I know it's hard to tell someone that what's going on with yourself, but you need to do it if you want to get out of the situation. So if you are in a hard situation, you have the resources. There are so many people out there that can help you. You have victim services out there that can help you, that are waiting for you to call them so they can, you know, give you that help and make sure that you're in a safe place. So please say something and give us a call, or at least let us know what's happening, or a family member that can help you out too.
Yes, because I think that a lot of people don't believe the worst case scenario will happen to them, even though all the signs may be pointing in that direction. I think human nature is not to believe that the worst will happen to you until it actually happens.
You know what? And I can honestly say that happened to me. So
really?
Yes. Not a lot of people know that, and not everybody is going to know that. But I went through, you know, an ex that actually had thought that person was the love of my life, and then next thing you know, never always said he would never put his hands on me, and then next thing you know, something happened where it led to that, and led for me fighting, and next thing you know, I made the decision of when he was gone, pack my stuff, and I left, for my safety. You know, I fear for my life, and it was not in the right position, because it's just things happen. I'd never thought that would have happened until, you know, I end up throwing hands, and next thing you know, I packed my stuff and I left, and that was the best decision I ever made, was doing that. So.
No, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. a little hard on that one, but I definitely
didn't see that.
Relate.
Didn't see that coming, Eddie.
No, a lot of people don't know that, and I think I honestly can. A lot of things have happened to me in my past where that made me a stronger person, and that did. I could definitely relate into being on the victim side and going through a domestic violence and things like that. So definitely, I can relate to that.
Now, Lieutenant Danny Brown says that you are a great de-escalator in situations that your presence and your demeanor can often de-escalate a situation with a suspect or an individual who's agitated, volatile, and perhaps even hostile.
Yes. Until they realize, basically, he does say that there's some times where he kind of gets amped up with somebody, gets amped up at the same time, and I just kind of butt in and said, hey. And I'll tell Lieutenant, just work on whatever and searching that he has, and I'll talk to the person. We want to de-escalate the situation first. We don't ever want to get that to get any, you know, more than what it is. Mm-hmm. So I try my best to de-escalate it, and that's the best way to make sure that the situation doesn't get any worse, where somebody actually gets hurt. Mm-hmm. I think he likes to say that sometimes women have a better way of de-escalating, because I guess our humble nature or something, our nice, you know, whatever it is,
maternal instinct or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The female. Yeah, it calms people down, and they'll just start asking, "Hey, you from you Puerto Rican?" Like, yes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know, like, hey, let's talk about what we're doing right here. You know, what's going on in your situation? And but we, you know, just talking it out is verbal judo. You know, verbal judo definitely goes a long way. Mm-hmm. So if I can't de-escalate the situation and he can de-escalate the situation, then we'll swap it, and I'll do the search, and then he'll de-escalate. It all depends who we run into, because everybody's different. Because we got folks who don't like women, who don't like to encounter women, who has a, you know, a bad experience with women or something like that, or the other way. So it all depends who we run into.
And your department uses technology at a high level. I remember one night there was a big chase of some armed robbers bailed out near a car dealership. And next thing you know, a deputy comes out and brings out a drone. And they're like drone flying over the woods looking for these guys. We were like, wow, they got drones in Richland County. Another time, I think they pulled somebody over and he wouldn't identify himself, had no ID, refused to say who he was. And deputy pulls out a little portable fingerprint scanner. Bam.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. So that technology that Sheriff Lott has provided your department with is really stuff that we have rarely seen in a lot of the other places that we've been on Live PD.
Yes, we have a lot of different departments. We like the aviation, and we have, of course, the bomb squad and things like that. And we have basic little things just like Nick wipes, you know, to check for cocaine or something like that. And we also have test kits, and we definitely have the fingerprint scanner that nobody realizes. So if they want to be that John Doe, we'll figure it out. It's okay. Just put your finger on this little thing real quick, and we'll figure out who you are. So we definitely have that technology, and they always try to update it. We got the body cams. We just got our body cams just upgraded to a different version now. So we're always trying to improve and get with the time so that we can make our job a little easier, a lot safer, so that we're at least prepared for anything that happens.
And your department has had some big events where the community came out as fans of the department and Live PD. And I think like more than 1,000 people have showed up at some of these events.
Yes. So the sheriff had tested out the waters on the first season by doing a pizza party, and it brought a lot of folks coming in from different areas in about 38 states. And the same thing when we did the 200th episode here, that it used to be at a different location, but because there were so many people coming, we had to upgrade the location to the state fairgrounds, because we had thousands and thousands of people coming literally from so many states, from Canada, from Indiana, from Ohio, from California. I mean, you name it, they were coming.
Yeah. Live PD Nation, man, our fans are just, they're just so devoted and so supportive of the show and of law enforcement agencies. And just to wrap this up, what's your perspective on what Live PD has brought to the discourse about policing and transparency and issues? What's your take on it?
You know, law enforcement was going through a dark path. You know, social media was making it so hard for us to, you know, bring what law enforcement really was. So they wasn't showing the beginning to end. And that's what we need to see. And what Life PD has done is shown the beginning and end to it, and understanding of what it is and what it's like to be a law enforcement officer and what are the things that we face all the time. So being able, now we have folks that are questioning. Now they see videos on Facebook, but now they're saying, instead of saying, oh, that's a bad cop, now they're looking at it and say, okay, so what happened? What was the initial stop? What was the probable cause? What did that person have? You know, what did they do? What did they say? You know, and what was the disposition at the end? So now people are questioning it and understanding that there is a beginning and end to things, and there's more to it. And instead of going by what social media is putting out, we're getting more support because they're seeing the transparency of what Life PD has brought out and what we've been doing. And all the departments are doing such a great job of showing what the job is. And you know what? Seeing our mistakes, seeing what we do, and it happens. We make mistakes, and that's perfectly fine, but they see that, and they understand, you know what? Hey, that happens. And Life PD has basically shown the people of what we are and what we can do, and that we're here for you. And not all of us are bad. You know, it's been an amazing experience. It has brought Richland County so much joy and improvement to our communities, that we're doing our job the best we can.
Senior Deputy Addie Perez from the Richland County Sheriff's Department, thank you so much for being here on PD Stories. Look forward to seeing you out in the street on Live PD. Be safe, take care, kiss the baby for us, and
yes,
we'll see you down the road.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for joining us today on PD Stories. If you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. And like us on Facebook.com/PD Stories for more information. You can also catch me on A&E's Live PD every Friday and Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. PD Stories was created and executive produced by Sue Funk, with producer Julie Magruder. Our editor is Steve Delamater. Special thanks to McKamey Lynn, Tisa Cassidy, Alicia Acuff, and the teams at A&E Networks and Podcast One for making this show possible. Until next time, I'm Tom Morris Jr.